You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 100.5 FM.
The Canada-China Foreign Investment Protection and Promotion Agreement, or FIPA, was tabled quietly by the Harper government at the end of September. The agreement between Canada and China is a bilateral investment treaty. It's similar to what Canada has included in its free trade deals since NAFTA. According to the Council of Canadians, it suffers from many of the same faults as its predecessors. Although nominally a trade deal, it is in reality a corporate rights pact. It will benefit Canadian and Chinese-based corporations at the expense of citizens in both countries. Stuart True is the trade campaigner for the Council of Canadians, and he's joined me by phone this morning from Hamilton to discuss FIPA. Hello, Stuart.
Hi, Jane.
Can you tell us a little bit more about FIPA? What's its purpose?
Sure. Actually, you had a pretty good description in the introduction there. I mean, this is an investment treaty. It is something that Canada has been signing for a long time. I think we have about almost 20 FIPAs in place with other countries. It was originally designed in the NAFTA scenario to protect Canadian and U.S. investment in Mexico, where it was felt by some Canadian corporations that the court system would not guarantee that they were treated fairly or that they had the same kind of protections as they would have in the Canadian and U.S. legal environment, essentially. What it's become has been, it's a treaty that contains broad protections. You know, one simply for national treatment, you have to treat Canadian and foreign companies where you have a FIPA in exactly the same way. You have to give the most favored nation treatment, which is, you know, companies deserve the best possible treatment that any foreign company is given in your country. So, for example, you might have a treaty with one country that is quite a bit better than a treaty with another. Anyway, it just basically guarantees that the corporations get the best possible treatment in your country. And then these FIPAs contain, as NAFTA did, they contain other substantive protections against things like expropriation. So if the government it seizes your property for some reason, then you're owed or you deserve to have fair market-based compensation in a very speedy manner. The problem with this substantive protection is beyond just simple expropriation, like beyond a government taking your property, companies can actually claim to have had their investment expropriated in an indirect way, for example, through regulation. So, for example, through an environmental policy or a public health measure or a conservation measure or any decision that maybe puts a hold on something they wanted to do as a company. And does it for environmental reasons or other reasons, democratic reasons, say the community doesn't want a project to go ahead near their community, they can claim that they've had their investment expropriated indirectly, and they can sue you. They can sue you as Canada, or say we have a FIPA with Jordan, we have FIPAs in trade agreements with Peru. You can sue any of these governments for, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars is what these lawsuits have come up to recently. And you can see that it doesn't matter that you're treating Canadian and foreign companies in exactly the same way. You can actually sue simply for a breach of these other substantive protections in the treaty, against things like regulatory expropriation.
And how long will it be in place?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, most of the FIPAs that Canada have signed, can be cancelled with about 6 months to a year's notice. The protections, though, that are built into them last for an extra 15 years after that. I mean, it's absurd in many ways that this is the norm now in U.S. and Canadian bilateral investment treaties, is that they're like zombies. They live for 15 years after you kill them, if you ever do decide to kill them. The case of this Chinese Canada-China FIPA is even crazier in a sense, because it automatically will be in place for 15 years as soon as it's ratified. Then, if you don't like it anymore, we can pull out. You get a year's notice to pull out, and then it lasts for another 15 years. So you might have seen in BC in particular, there's been a lot of news about this, how excessive this is. Essentially, it's a guaranteed 31 years of protection for Chinese investment in Canada. And of course, where is that investment going to take place? It's going to be in the infrastructure projects. It's going to be in energy, mining, gas. We can say that conclusively because that's where the trends are. That's what we've seen over the past 6 years, is that this is where the investment is going to go. And in fact, if you look at the track record globally of companies using these treaties, not just Canadian treaties, but there's about 3,000 of these things in existence around the world. It is the mining, it's the energy, it's the resource companies that are using them increasingly to basically, like a club, guarantee that their projects go through. And if their projects don't go through, in the case of a mine, for example, in El Salvador, a gold mine, they use them to exact punishment on the government for making a choice that was based on environmental and democratic considerations.
So once a government signs this, then all the future governments we see in Canada, all the future governments for 31 years are going to be subject to this, no choice whatsoever.
That's right, no choice. This investment regime, the investor-to-state dispute settlement process, is excessive, I think, in every sense. And it's why we call them corporate rights pacts instead of trade or investment deals, because it puts all the cards into their hands, essentially. It basically says foreign investors in Canada, and likewise Canadian investors abroad, so you think of Canada being strong in areas like mining, resource companies, finance, infrastructure, these same companies abroad, it gives you the rights to, it's a get-out-of-court-free card, essentially. It gives you the rights to, more rights than anyone else in the country, to dispute policies you don't like, to sue the country when you feel that your profits are being undermined. In every sense of the word, it's a corporate rights pact, and it's why certain countries are kind of turning their back on it. They're saying this is a bad idea. We use Australia as the example a lot because Australia and Canada are very similar in many ways. Government-wise, industry-wise, Australia is also a mining powerhouse. And yet it has decided last year that it's not going to negotiate these kinds of FIPA-like treaties anymore because it doesn't think you should be treating, it thinks national investors and foreign investors should be treated exactly the same way. And it doesn't see why government should have to socialize the risks of investing abroad, which is what these treaties do. They say, you might not get your way as a company when you go and invest in Colombia or Peru or wherever, or if China's case, you might come into some problems here in Canada. But that's not your problem as a company. You know, even though it's your decision to go invest there, we're going to let the people of that country absorb the risk, because if you don't get your way, you can sue for damages. So in a very real way, it's offloading the risk of investment on an often very questionable investment, investment that people are opposed to more and more these days in mining and resources. It's saying it's offloading that risk onto the people.
How common are investor lawsuits in Canada?
They're quite common. Actually, Canada is, because of NAFTA, Canada's the sixth most sued, I guess, or challenged or disputed country in the world under this investor-to-state dispute regime. This is a stat from the UN, actually. It's the United Nations statistic. We've been challenged for a ban on the trade in PCB waste, for example. We had to pay a company, SD Myers, simply because we were abiding by our treaty requirements that we not allow the trade in toxic chemicals. We were supposed to be dealt with in Canada. They wanted to export them into the United States. It was actually illegal in the United States, and Canada put the ban in place because of this treaty obligation. And yet an investment tribunal said, it doesn't matter, you still violated the company's rights to minimum standards of treatment. That's another substantive protection that goes beyond just not treating companies the same way. We expropriated their profits through this measure, which we were required to take under another treaty. There's been cases where I live in Ontario nearby recently. St. Mary's Cement, it was formerly Canadian, very recently purchased by a Brazilian firm, And by virtue of having some registration in the United States, they are able to sue under NAFTA for a decision in Ontario to block a quarry that they wanted to build just outside Hamilton. There's other cases. Dow AgroSciences, which is a subsidiary of Dow Chemical, challenged the pesticide bylaw in Quebec. They didn't win that case, but the government was forced to apologize to the company for implying that their product could potentially harm people's health, which, of course, the studies show that it can. So there have been some incredible cases in Canada. We've been on the hook for around $170 million so far in payouts to the companies or settlements with the companies, and that's where a case doesn't get all the way to the end decision. The government settles beforehand. And the most recent one, which I think I think the government is trying to suppress this. We haven't seen the award yet. But ExxonMobil and Murphy Oil, two American oil companies, just won a NAFTA case against Canada because of a requirement in Newfoundland that they reinvest some of their offshore oil profits into research and development in the province. This was a legal policy. This was a policy we were supposed to have excluded from these NAFTA rules that ban things like performance requirements on companies. It was supposed to be excluded from that, and yet an investment tribunal has said you violated the investment rights of these two companies. They were asking for $65 million. The Harper government has not made the award public yet, which, you know, on a completely different note, goes against what Harper's saying about how transparent this process is and how fair and open it is. And I think that's a perfect example of where we could run into trouble with new investment from China or any other country. Think of Europe. Europe's looking to invest heavily, more than it is now, in the tar sands and in pipelines and in these resource projects. So absolutely, we have not been in Canada. This process has not been good for Canada, for the Canadian people. And we wonder why the government continues to just sign the same treaty over and over again when it just, these things backfire, and we've just been hit over and over again with these excessive losses.
No, as you say, this happens over and over again. There have been a number of free trade agreements with, for example, Colombia or Peru. It seems that this free trade agreement with China has garnered a lot more criticism than those. And in progressive circles, people have been saying that they think that some of this criticism has particularly anti-China origin. What do you think of that criticism?
Oh, I don't doubt that there is a strong element of that in some of the criticism, and also in the criticism of things like the CNOOC purchase of Nexen. You know, I don't doubt that there is an element of fear of China in this. But there's also other very good reasons that, from the campaigns I've seen against this, against the treaty with China, there are other very good reasons to be more worried about this one in Canada because of the impact in Canada. And China is the much, there's more Chinese investment in Canada than there is Canadian investment abroad. You know, the effect of this treaty we can guess is going to be the same as the effect that the NAFTA treaty's been on us, where the U.S. is the bigger investor. I mean, I think it's the impacts here in Canada that are really sparking people to the problem with investment treaties. As an organization, the Council of Canadians, that's been fighting all of these treaties, no matter where we sign them, and we did fight the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, and we are fighting the Panama Free Trade Agreement right now, and it's for all the reasons we've just talked about, the excessive corporate rights that are granted through these treaties. I think I've seen in the opposition to the China treaty a major opportunity to discuss investment treaties in Canada that really hasn't existed since the big fight over the multilateral agreement on investment from the late 1990s. Now, listeners might not remember that fight clearly anymore, but at the time it was very, very big. Nobody, you know, a majority of people in Canada did not like the idea of granting corporations from the OECD countries, from developed countries, the right to sue Canada or any other country for penalties for policies that undermine their profits. And so I see this opposition to the China as an opportunity to, like you said, bring up the other treaties that we have in place, ask why we signed those, and in particular look down the road to this European treaty that Harper is hoping to conclude maybe even by the end of the year, which we know is going to have the exact same FIPA-like guarantees for European companies. As I was just saying, these companies are investing as much, if not more, than Chinese investors in the tar sands, in pipelines, in resource and mining.
Thank you very much for talking to us this morning, Stuart. And I'm going to point people towards your website where I know people can go if they want to register their opposition to this free trade deal. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
Thanks, Jane.
I've been speaking with Stuart True. He is the trade campaigner for the Council of Canadians. And if you want to learn more about the Canada-China Investment Treaty, you can go to canadians.org, where you can find out what you can do to register your opposition.